The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show featuring Gogo the Chimp.
Nothing like a chimp to liven up a radio show.
Easy there, Gogo. No, Gogo. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Wow, that's an old intro, because as you know, Gogo died earlier this year. Took his own life. Very rare for chimps to do that. But Todd Wilkerson, he'll just drive you over the edge. If you listened to my first hour with Robert Leon Davis, his book is Running Scared. This is a New Orleans cop who became corrupt, got arrested, and then decides to skip off into the woods of Canada for the rest of his life and survive off the land, running from the law. One of the most amazing stories, just beyond belief. We got pretty far in the story, but I said we got to do part two. Hey there, Robert Leon Davis, welcome back to the program.
Okay, good being back.
I cannot get over your story, and I don't want to speed past that. I said we got to do part two because this is so rich. For people who are just tuning in, if you didn't listen to part one with Robert Leon Davis, the book is Running Scared, Beyond Belief. This is one of these stories I cannot believe it. It says, for 22 years, a fugitive, the corrupt cop busted by God. And it doesn't even begin to tell the riches of this story. So when we last left you, you had escaped the law. You're a corrupt cop. You're going to go to Angola prison. You're going to die. And you make a decision to study up and to figure out how to live off the land. Your only hope is to escape into the wild woods of Canada and to live your life out there. So you succeed in doing that, as we heard in the last show. And now you are alone in the woods, the deep woods of Canada. What are you planning to do up there with the rest of your life?
Well, by this time, after a few years of living out there, when I came out because I really thought, I came out one day and went into town. I guess I had been out in the woods then for about two and a half years straight without seeing anybody or doing anything. Your mind play tricks on you, you know, all kind of stuff. You're talking to yourself, and I began to have vision problems where I couldn't see that good anymore. I thought I maybe beginning to have a tumor. I don't know why my mind went there, but I said, you know, I'm probably have some kind of brain tumor, because I had some studies on some medicines, like I said, first aid technique and stuff like that. And so I came out the woods, and it was very surreal coming out of the woods.
Now, what part of Canada are you in? Are you still in that same area, or did you go north?
I'm about 100 miles west of Montreal in Gatineau National Forest.
Okay.
And so I come out onto the main highway, and I start walking down the highway towards the nearest town, trying to get to Montreal. And lo and behold, after two and a half years of standing out in the woods, lo and behold, who comes down the road? An Ontario Provincial Police officer. And asked me, do I need a lift? And
I was going to say, at that point, I don't know what the answer is. What's the answer?
I said yes. I had to say yes. Otherwise, I would be suspicious. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, and I just happened to reach an area where there were some tourists. So I just thought maybe this guy is just a hiker, a day hiker.
Uh-huh.
And so I took the ride. And for the first time, when I got in the back of his vehicle, for the first time, I smelt myself because of the plexiglass. I was in an enclosed area.
Right.
And it wasn't nothing nice.
And I was going to say, if he smells you, he knows you're not a day hiker.
Well, apparently he couldn't smell me, but he gave me a ride to the nearest town, and I was able to go to a mission at that time and explained to them that, you know, what I was having, I needed to see a doctor and so forth and so forth. And this particular, but Montreal, even back then, Montreal, there's a lot of blacks in Montreal. People probably don't know that because a lot of people from the islands, if they can't, like Jamaica and Haiti, if they can't get into the U.S., that's where they go.
I didn't know that. I would never expect to see black people in Montreal. That's interesting. Okay, so you could blend in a little bit.
Well, what I mean is from Haiti mostly because they share a common language with the French in Montreal.
I forgot about that. Okay.
Yeah, that's the key. That's the key. And so, therefore, I was looked up on as a Haitian and had studied up on some French and knew some French. Now, that's one thing I had known that helped me is that I knew some basic French living in New Orleans, and I studied it when I was in Montreal. So I got along enough to be able to have a conversation in it. And so I went to a mission, and lo and behold, I found out that I didn't need it wasn't a brain tumor, but I needed glasses.
That's the problem with reading too much. If you read the Merck manual, you think you're dying from nine different things. But
that's why I said too much knowledge is bad for you. It really is because you get to thinking all kinds of stuff. And by that time, I wasn't as hot, even though I know the police was still looking for me. Because later, when I gave myself up, my mom told me after 20-something years, my mom told me that they were still doing stakeouts at the house, even years after I was
20
born.
Years later?
Yeah, they were still, well, not 20. She told me 20 years after I gave myself up.
Oh, I see.
That all the way up until like the fifth or sixth year, they were still doing wiretaps on her phone. And, of course, I wasn't going to call because the worst time to call anybody is on my favorite holidays, and that's Thanksgiving and Christmas. And those are the days that they would set you up on. So
they would,
you know,
right.
I came on back and I came into some of the cities, and I for maybe a week I did a little work enough to maybe get some canned goods.
Well, now hang on. So you're still living in the woods, mm-hmm. but you will come out now and again. And this is in Canada. You're west of Montreal. So you're living in the woods, but you feel safe enough to come out now and again to do what?
Just to be able to earn enough money to get some basic stuff like canned. See, one thing I had missed, and I talk about my book. The one thing I had missed out in the woods, I missed coffee, okay?
You are just so full of surprises. I don't know what you're going to say next.
Oh, you're going to like this one.
You missed coffee.
Yes, and the other thing that I missed that I wish I had was a toenail clipper.
Yeah.
Because I had to ball myself up like a child to bite my toenails off because it was going through my socks at a great rate. I needed my socks for warmth.
You are bringing up stuff that most people, including you, would not think of ahead of time. That is very funny.
No, you don't think about that. I mean, especially toenail clippers and I got pretty adaptive. I mean, I could clip them pretty good with my teeth.
I don't need that image, you know. Brother.
Okay,
I rebuke you.
I won't give you that one.
I don't need the image of a man in the woods of Canada doing that. But I mean, this is really nuts. If anybody's thinking about going living in the woods, be sure and pack a toenail clipper or something. Okay, so you needed some stuff. So you go and you said you would work like odd jobs, or what would you do?
Yeah, just go. Well, the first thing I did was found a fence. And remember, I was adept at stealing cars and stripping them. Montreal, they love American cars, and so I found the fence, and I would just go back to my same thing, hot wire car, and then I would strip it down for the usable parts, and I sell it to the fence, and then I go get some canned goods like coffee and Vienna sausage, Spam.
That's my favorite meal. My wife won't cook it.
Oh, I love it, you know, and even though I was hungry, so you got to remember now, for the first 2 years I'm out there, I'm existing only on game.
Game can be kind of gamey.
Oh, game is gamey. I mean,
you're looking for a little chicken or a little something, and you got to eat raccoon. What kind of, what did you eat?
We're talking about white-tailed deer, you won't find that in New Orleans. well, they had rabbits. Their rabbits was called hares because they were huge. Okay, they were
yes.
three times the size of a rabbit.
Right,
I would eat that. They had that's mentioned white-tailed deer. They had beavers out there. Beaver is good.
They had what?
Beaver.
Beaver.
Yeah.
I thought beaver would that they would be really like strong taste, too strong.
Right.
We're going to go to a break. We're going to go to a break, and I'm going to interrogate you on what other wild game you ate. We've covered the toenail thing, so we're not going to return to that subject ever in my lifetime. We'll be right back, folks. I'm talking to Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared.
Every night, a different town, I sing my song. Play and sing, pack my things, and move along. A pretty face, another face, I never get to know. One night stand, another show.
Hey folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Have I got a story for you? I don't know if you've been listening, but boy, oh boy, part one was amazing. We're now into the second part of the story of Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared. Robert, I really cannot get over this. So you are in the woods, but now you feel the safety after a couple of years to come out of the woods now and again. You're in Canada, so you're a long ways from New Orleans.
And, ways.
And you are you're basically you're living off the land, but you can come into the woods now and again and you know steal something, sell something.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But normally you're yeah. eating game. So, what is the craziest thing you ate out there in the woods?
Wow, the craziest thing I probably ate was a turkey vulture, and we don't have those here.
Those are the nastiest looking.
Yes, yeah, but it was during a time that. You got to keep in mind, I went to, I think, 3 winters there. So when I arrived there, remember it was December when I left in 1979. So I entered Canada at the worst possible time for the elements. And December and January and parts of February is brutal. I mean, the temperature was down. I went down to 20 below zero a couple of times on me. And it was quite brutal, but. If the nastiest thing I had, and it was only because it had died a few hours earlier from the cold, was a turkey vulture. But you know, I would eat, like I tell anyone, I would eat stuff a big goat would pass up on at that point, because you know, we're talking about a desperation mode. Type of thing when it comes down
well,
to survival.
If you ate a turkey vulture, now turkey vulture, I mean, anybody who has seen a vulture, they are some of the foulest looking creatures. They look like something yeah. right out of hell. Yeah. They're just ugly, yeah. nasty. But yeah, if you're yeah. hungry, you're not asking questions.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, I didn't eat for a taste. I mean, it wasn't like I had salt and pepper out there and olive oil. I ate for nutrition purposes.
Wait, you couldn't get salt and pepper after you know?
Well, yeah, sometimes I could, but I develop a taste, and that's a funny thing. You develop a taste where if you don't do certain stuff, you like today. I mean, I have to, even today, my doctor see me, he has to make me have, he has to make, literally make me have some salt on food because, my salt level is extremely low till it's dangerous. I mean, it's like I'm not used to it anymore. And if I taste something with salt, it's you know, with sugar, I can't have sugar. It's very, you know, I'm not used to it anymore.
You detoxed in the woods of Canada.
I detoxed from it. Yeah. I just detoxed from it.
But you didn't. It sounds like you didn't detox from caffeine.
Well, I still do my caffeine, but I'll tell you what that you would find surprising. And like I said, I got 8 siblings here, and they laugh at me when they come over to the house and some of my son and daughter. I still live a very rustic life, meaning that if I cook my food in a pot, I don't put it in a plate. I eat out of a pot.
Yeah.
And I don't use utensils like people mostly use.
Are you married?
No.
I knew it. I knew it because there's no
marry somebody like me, man.
No,
come on.
No woman would put up with that.
No, I'm a mental case. My daughter told me she's trying to finish up eventually to be a psychologist. And I told her, she said, you'll be my first patient.
Well, listen, without women, men would all be living under bridges, eating raw food. You know, like that's a whole other story. Okay, so you're doing this for 22 years, and I want to get to the end part, but I still can't believe. Here's a stupid question: why didn't you go to Mexico, which is a lot closer to New Orleans?
No, black. There's not. Listen, that's the worst place a black man could go in the 70s. Come on, Mexico.
I don't know.
No way. You're not gonna find, even today, you're not gonna find many black people in Mexico. Now, if you can get a little bit further south, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking about areas like Brazil and stuff. Yeah, you got a large black population.
But why didn't you think of going in that direction rather than?
Because I knew that was gonna be the area they looked for first. I mean, keep in mind, New Orleans is only a stone's throw, figuratively speaking, from the border of Mexico. All I gotta do is go through Texas. I could get the Mexico border from New Orleans in 5.5 hours.
Well, I'm just saying, if you kept going south, the woods of Brazil might have been more friendly. But anyway, okay, so you're up there, and when you say you were up there for 22 years before you turned yourself in, so what happened? I still cannot get over the fact that
I'm in different places now. Now we're 5 years. I'm in Montreal. Now I come back to the States. I go through the Smoky Mountain.
Whoa! You came back to the States.
I came back to the States when it got cool, when I think it got cool a little bit, you know, like as far as the police looking for me.
Right? Okay. So five years after Canada, you go across the border back to the States, and you go all the way down to the Smoky Mountains.
I go to places like, let's see, sometimes I'm able to remember. I stay through some national forests in upstate New York, which is beautiful. I was going to stay in Vermont, but that's the place. That's the one state. See, you got to remember, I'm all over the place in 22 years. I'm from the East Coast to the West Coast. The only place I couldn't camp at was Vermont, because that was the place that there were no black people at.
Because Vermonters are racist. Everybody knows that.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All I know was I didn't see any black people there.
They're famous liberal racists. They go to Vermont and they vote. They vote communist and socialist. But the reality is they don't like black people.
Is that right?
No.
I went down through New York State. I went and stayed in the Great Smoky Mountains in North Carolina and in Tennessee. I went to Illinois and stayed in some woods there. I went all the way across the United States and stayed in some woods in California.
Yeah, this is like Johnny Appleseed. I mean, I cannot believe that you did this. And all this time.
Well, you keep moving, you know?
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind because.
One night there was a guy that came in, and he was obviously, I'll try to make this quick because I know you're running out of time. He came in, and I could tell, obviously, this was in the woods of Tennessee. And it was just before I gave myself up, matter of fact. And he was coming in with suitcases and all kind of stuff in the woods. And I began to sit down and gave him some coffee and tell him about the story of my story. And he said, "You've been out here that long?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "You're not going to see your grandmother no more. You're not going to see your mom, your kids." You know, and I began to tell this guy, this was his first day on the run. You know, the next day he turned himself in. He turned himself in because of the life I told him he has to look ahead to.
Wow.
He was so afraid of that. He told me, "I'd just rather serve the time, man." So I said, "It was your choice."
He wasn't going to go get killed in Angola, so, you know.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, I don't know what he was there for, but, yeah, I was just letting him know, you know, that, you know, this is real life. All this packing suitcases and toothbrushes, that's not part of the territory, you know.
Okay, so this goes on, and at what point do you begin to think, I gotta end this?
Well, I never thought I was going to end it. You know, I mean, at this point, at the 22nd year, I mean, come on, you got to remember now. I had been gone, and this is it's weird to say this. I had been gone longer than I was here, if that makes any sense. In other words, I had been on the road longer than before I even left New Orleans.
Well, now that doesn't make sense because you said you left in 79. Well, you must have been in your 20s.
Yeah, I'm about 22. I'm going off the cuff here. I can't remember the exact thing. I'm like 22 when I leave, but now I'm turning myself in like 46. Okay, so yeah. You do the math.
Okay.
So it's pretty close what I'm saying.
I got you.
Over,
yeah, no, I got you.
I've spent a much time in the woods traveling than I did in New Orleans.
Yeah, okay.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so I have nothing to look for in New Orleans. I mean, New Orleans is a thing of the past for me. You know, at this point, what I'm struggling with is my grandmother and thoughts of her.
Had you had any contact with her?
No. You know, and I'll tell you something. And this was, to me, it was divine providence. I went on the run in 1979. My grandmother died in 78. And I was so happy in one way and so sad. I was happy because she would have made me stay and fight the case.
Gotcha.
I was glad that she couldn't see my shame and dishonor.
Right.
You know, so right. She died about a year. She died 1 year before I went on the run. And I began to have those kind of thoughts about my grandmother, and all these scriptures started popping up in my head about what she would be saying.
After 22 years, the scriptures are popping into your head, even though you were functionally an atheist.
Well, yeah, but it's not really popping up through my head, like, from a biblical standpoint.
Yeah.
It's popping up in my head from her mouth.
I got you. Okay, hang on. We're going to go to another break. Folks, one of the most fascinating stories you will ever hear. The book is Running Scared, Robert Leon Davis.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 for your chance to win and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years.
Hey folks, trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea. And so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com.
It's the Eric Metaxas Show. That's DC Talk with Jesus Freaks. I'm talking to Robert Leon Davis about Running Scared, which is his book. What a story. 22 years on the run, living in the woods, living off the land. This is nuts. And then at the end, you're telling me now, after 22 years on the run, successfully running from the law, you are being haunted by the words of your grandmother quoting scriptures. It begins to get to you.
It begins to get to me to the point that I'm beginning to start, and I can't go into it. Of course, you know, the readers is going to have to get the book about the revelation that I've had that one day that was the day. It was a period of 1 week that I went through stuff trying to prove the existence of God. I'll use an example. I won't keep them in the mystery, but I do an example, like when I would be in the woods, there were, I started thinking about her, and I started thinking, I said, you know, there is no such thing as God. And I remember saying sometime, and this went on for about a week, I would say, you know what, if there's a God, and there was this tree, I don't know, a bush that I saw over there, and I said, you know what, I'm about to go hunting. When I come back, if this bloom is blooming, then I believe there's a God. And I go hunting, and I'm gone for 2-3 hours, because I always hunt you always hunt 2 to 3 miles away from your camp. You never bring you only want to bring back to your camp what you're going to consume. Otherwise, you're bringing bears and wolves there. And anyway, so I come back, you know, after hiking 2 miles there, 2 miles back, killing my game, bringing it back. You know, bloom would be blooming, you know. And I was little things like that. Then I would come back and say, well, when I come back from this, watching TV, I explained what watching TV meant to me. You know, maybe this would happen. Just little bitty. Crazy.
So you're looking for signs from God in nature.
Yes, I'm looking for signs because I've mastered nature at this point. I know nature. I mean, I know at this point I could tell you any track I saw. I could tell you whether that animal was hunting or whether that animal just had a regular gait. I could tell you if he was running. I could tell you what animal it was. I was a pure animal in the true sense of the word, which is basically why I believe I was never attacked by the wolves that I lived by, because I believe they felt that I was going to serve them no harm and they weren't going to do me no harm, because, you know, they're carnivores. They want meat, but they never bothered me. I had an attack by a wolverine, but that's a whole other story.
Wait a minute. You were attacked by a wolverine?
Oh, yeah, I was attacked by a wolverine.
You think I'm just going to skip past that, Robert?
You would.
A wolverine is one of the scariest animals on this planet.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about that, when you're talking about nature and talking about the Lord, you got to understand something with this, with the wolverine. And maybe God put that up for a reason. I had to put him down, okay? But I wind up, he had three wolverines. They have no more than three cubs, two or three. And after I put him down,
Must have been a she if she had cubs.
Yeah, she. It was a she wolverine.
Okay.
Yeah. The male doesn't take care of them. The female does. Anyway, right. I found myself going back there every day, looking at those animals, and wondering if they were going to die. And they were yipping and yipping and yipping for their mother. And I'm beginning to think, you know, they're doing the same thing I'm going through. You know, they're suffering the same way that I'm suffering. And one day I went back there and they were dead. And I said to myself, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to come on day, you know.
I never thought, and I'm not kidding, I never thought I would feel sad over the death of a wolverine. But I never did, neither.
I mean, but I tell you some happy moments. When, like I said, I saw 4 generations of bird. A bird fell out the tree. And I went back up to put it up. And from that encounter, that bird, the mother bird, they usually will abandon us if they smell human scent on. But for some reason, I went back and that was one of the trees that I would watch TV in.
Yeah.
And I guess the female bird got a feeling or something, a sense that I was not threatening. And she did deal with the birds until the point that she went off. Those birds flew the coop. They came and nested in the same tree, and I was able to go there and pick up their babies without the mother even leaving. And I went through that for 4 generations. Actually, that was the hardest part about leaving Canada, was leaving the bird friends I had developed.
Unbelievable.
The only thing I had a feeling for was those birds.
Oh.
The only thing. Yeah. So there's moments, you know, everything, sometimes things seemingly is bad, but it turns out good, meaning that what I mean by that is that, you know, of course, you know that I'm Christian also. You know, you could, God can forgive you, but he doesn't necessarily have to restore you.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is you could be forgiven and still have to serve life in prison.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you understand what I'm saying?
Well, it's like all those guys in Angola. I mean, that you know, they love a lot of guys there now. They love Jesus, but they're not coming out of there except in a pine box.
And that's what I mean. He could forgive you, but he doesn't necessarily have to restore you.
Right.
In my case, he forgave me and restored me.
Yeah.
And I would be foolish not to do something with that gift, you know, with that chance. And hence why I go around, I speak to police recruits, I speak to schools, churches, university, anybody. It doesn't make any difference. I don't charge nothing.
We're gonna come back to talk to Robert Leon Davis. Folks, the book is Running Scared. If you don't get a copy, you might be crazy.
You know I need your love. You got that hold over me. Long as I got your love.
Captain and Tennille, and a lot of Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared. We got to get to the punchline, Robert, because this is like, there is so much here. I'm just in love with this story and with you. But you're telling me now that God is haunting you. You're in the woods 22 years and something happens. Can you tell us what happens?
Yeah, I couldn't hear you there for a second.
Yeah. Now, I was going to say, tell us what happened that drove you to turn yourself in. Did God reveal himself to you in the woods? What happened?
Well basically, as I said, I was playing with nature, playing with God is what I say. And everything that I was asking him in the woods of Tennessee in my 22nd year, it was 2001, came down to something that was amazing to me. And I write about it in my book. I tell you my story, and it's about the rock in the can. It was my last day in the woods, in which some people, there's some people, Eric, that don't believe in miracles, and some people believe that miracles and things are only old school stuff. You know, it only happens back in the days, and you had to be a prophet and stuff. That's not true. You know, with certain people, I still do believe it's life, they experience their own personal miracles. And whether a person believes it or not, it's beyond the point. The point is, did the person believe it?
Yes.
You know what I'm trying to say?
I wrote a book on miracles. I'm right with you. This is, when we're done with this whole thing, I want to get your address and I'll mail you a copy because this is big.
So
you're telling me you experienced the miracle in the woods.
Well, I took... the old 5-pound coffee cans?
Yep.
I took that, and I got a week of playing with nature, a week of playing with God. And I found my tent, and I had an old 5-pound coffee can. I turned it upside down, and I placed a pebble on top. I said, now, this would be the ultimate test, so-called God. I said, if I wake up in the morning and that rock is under the can, I will give myself up.
Are you kidding me? Wait a minute. You put a stone on top of a can, down can. And
five-pound coffee can.
And you're asking God to do what is a real crazy miracle. You're saying that if I wake up and the rock is under the can, I will turn myself in.
Right. Now, when I woke up, the rock wasn't there. Now, I'm looking at the tent. I'm looking at it. It's not there. Now, keep in mind two factors. I never looked underneath the can, and I'll tell you why, and it'll make sense to any Christian. But skeptic says that an animal or a bird or a squirrel could have took the pebble.
Of course.
Okay. But to me, it's not there anymore. Why would I want to look underneath that can? I was so petrified at what I didn't see, that I actually urinated on myself.
Okay, so you wake up. In other words, you've done this thing, and you were so freaked out.
Yeah.
Because you're alone in the woods, and rocks don't disappear. Everybody knows
like
rocks.
I've had skeptics that said a bird could have taken it, a squirrel could have come around and taken it, you know, or whatever. I don't care what they say. What I'm saying to you is that whatever happened, because I believe firmly the rock was underneath the can, whatever happened was enough for me to completely give up all atheistic thoughts and give myself immediately up the next day after 22 years.
So you never looked under the can?
Never looked under the can.
Yeah.
My brothers laugh at me now, like, you think if we go back there, you could find that can?
Ah.
I don't even want to see that can.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even want to see that can. I mean, what I'm saying is that you're trying to break, in other words, the miracle that made me the better man that I am today, you're trying to tell me, skeptics, I'm talking about the skeptics, you're trying to tell me that it was for naught, that that's not what I experienced. But then how is it then that it was the only thing that could make me voluntarily surrender? Remember, to your audience, they never caught me. I voluntarily surrendered to the point that they couldn't even find me in the computer system in 2001 because we wasn't using computers back in 1979.
Okay, now we gotta find out. Okay, so you are convinced God tells you to turn yourself in. You turn yourself in where? Where are you?
I'm in Tennessee.
Okay, so you're in Tennessee. You turn yourself in. Do they care? What do they say when you turn yourself in?
I looked in the phone book because at that time there was no cell phones or whatever. It was phone books, pages. I saw my sister's name. It was actually through the library. I went to the library phone book, and it had books of different states back there. I don't know if they still do that. I found my sister's name in the phone book, called her up, and I told her that I was giving myself up the next day. And she's my baby sister. When I left, I was, like I said, 20s. She was only, like, 9, maybe 8. Mm,
yeah.
So when I told her, I said, this is your brother. She said, who is this? And I said, this is your brother, Robert. She said, I don't have a brother named Robert. And I said, I'm your brother, Robert. You never heard of me? And she said, no. She said, oh, you know what? Mom and them did tell me that I had an older brother that disappeared. So she didn't even know me. She had only heard of me, you know?
So did you, because we're gonna run out of time here.
Okay.
You go in, you turn yourself in, and what do they give you time? What do they do?
No, I turned myself in to the district attorney's office. This is 2001. I say, you're a free man. You're not in the computer. You're free to walk out here. And I had to make an instant decision on what I was going to do. And after thinking about the rock and the can, I said to myself, there's no way in the world that I'm not going to show them what I need to show them, which is that I am wanted. So I pointed across the street and convinced them to go into to find my old man, in which they found it, and it clearly showed my name on it and that I was wanted. And it was so unbelievable to the DA that instead of protocol, which is to put me in jail, he walked me across the street to a judge. And
hang on right there. We're going to be right back, folks. Final segment with Robert Leon Davis. The book is Running Scared. Folks, it's Eric Metaxas. Safe bet that Neil Sedaka never spent any years hiding out in the woods from the law. I'm talking to Robert Leon Davis. Running Scared is the book. We just got a couple of minutes, Robert. We got to have you back another time. But just to wrap up, so you prove to them that you are the man, that you have been running from the law 22 years. They take you to the judge. What happens?
The judge, it was close. Again, we're talking about miracles again. The original judge that put me in jail gave me the bond and all that back in 1979 was still an existing judge in that particular court.
Right.
Check this out. That guy in 22 years was sick for a period of 2 weeks. He happened to be sick the day that another substitute judge was in court. That judge was the judge to my freedom. She eventually since we got so little time, she eventually had enough faith in me to tell me that I think your time that you had spent out there was you principally incarcerated yourself. And I'm going to take a chance on you, and I'm going to release you and let you be a free man. She said, I hope you don't fail me. Now, I want you to understand what I just said. The judge that originally wanted me, that originally wanted to prove a point with me, had gotten sick only during a specific amount of time, after 22 years. And I walked in at the very window that a substitute judge is there to give me freedom.
Did this bolster your faith in God at the time?
What can it do? Yeah. What can it do but that? I mean, you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, it's amazing. And matter of fact, once I wrote the book and so forth, I sent her a copy of the book, and she saw me on TV and news and stuff, and she's retired. She said, you know what? You restored my faith in humanity. Yeah, I'm very proud. I'm very proud of that particular point. And when they took me over to see her, this is the funny thing I want to leave with, is that they took me there. It was only, remember, I left December 79. I returned the same date in December 2001
yeah.
of December.
Right.
And the funny thing about it was it was like 8 days before Christmas on both of them. And the DA said, well, we're going to lock him up until the court date. And she looked at it. She said, because he's a flight risk, because he'd already proved he will run. She took her glasses off her face and looked at the DA and said, if you couldn't catch him in 22 years, what make you think if I let him go to his sister and enjoy his first Christmas, he's not going to come back here next week?
Wow.
So,
oh, man.
I know. And like I said before, because I don't want to get shut off when we would do a part two on that to your audience, that's very vital and important to me, and I'm sure you understand. I don't profit from this book, this work, my stuff. I donate that to women and children in hospitals. So I don't want somebody to think that because of my bad, you know, I'm living
right.
the life of Riley. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right.
If they saw what I was living at, they probably would send me a little donation.
I would like to send you a knife and a fork and a toenail clipper. Oh, my gosh. Robert, listen, Robert, this has been a tremendous blessing to me. I want to have you back because there's more to this. We're out of time now,
yeah,
but I want to have you back. Get us to stay on the line. I want to get your address so I can send you a book. But we'll continue on this and we'll stay in touch with you. This has been a huge blessing for me. Thank you, Robert Leon Davis.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
God bless you, folks.
God bless you.
This is a true story. Tell your friends. Thank you.